Well, you can say hi if you want to.
Hi, this is
howdy.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, this is Greg LeMond. Welcome to the VeloCast.
That's nice, really nice, yeah.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the VeloCast. This week, we'll be looking forward to the Race of the Falling Leaves, looking quizzically at Rafa, looking at a double-glazed future for Patrick Lefevre, and looking for the Torag who's stolen an ornate fruit bowl belonging to Geraint Thomas. But first, a new look Paris Tour provided some much-needed post-Worlds entertainment this week as the old Sprinters Classic was transformed into a gnarly gravel fest. From a decimated peloton, it was the trio of Nicky Terpstra, Benoit Cosefroy and Soren Krag Anderson who emerged from the revamped run-in to the Avenue de Grammont with a Sunweb rider soloing to victory from 10 kilometres out.
Do you know, the many, many years that I've been having discussions with Killian, who'll make a return to your ears this weekend, I'm recording with him on Saturday morning, he's hammered home to me that a lot of these traditions, be it courses or, you know, practices amongst the peloton that we regard as set in stone now, are actually relatively recent. And that, you know, parkour in particular are subject to change. So I am never ever going to try and stifle innovation of change. And I loved what I saw at the weekend. I was absolutely enthralled by those detours through the vineyards to see the kind of riders who might excel in, for example, a Paris-Roubaix or a Strade Bianche get to ply their craft this late in the season brought a warm glow to my heart. But there is no bloody way that was Paris Tours. Other than the fact that you're finishing tours.
I mean, I guess that goes back to your initial point of what Killian has often said about various aspects of the sport is that it's never ever set in stone, and it's only in recent memory that things have become what we think as set in stone. Yeah. The Paris Tour, for example, being the Sprinters Classic, it's just because that's what we're used to.
See, if they'd had thought, you know Ardennes week, you've got those three races of a very similar character but very different personality, and it's a festival of cycling. See if they'd introduced the parkour that we saw at the weekend as part of, you know, a way to follow up the Worlds to avoid that kind of flatness that we get, despite Il Lombardia, you know, one of the most beautiful races coming up this coming weekend. See if they'd introduced that parkour as part of a kind of joint championship of Paris Tour weekend. If they'd set up a separate race, I would have been applauding like a mad person. And I really don't hold with the "it's I been this way, we'll always do it." But it was just so different. It came as a bit of a shock to the system. I mean, I've been chatting to listeners, to subscribers. I haven't met anyone or talked to anyone who didn't love what they saw at the weekend, but who didn't go, "It's not the Paris Tours that Andrea Taffy won, is it?"
Well, I can only then deduce from that Patrick Lefevre isn't one of our subscribers, because he was chief amongst those who was not happy about what we saw. And we'll look in depth in at the race and how it played out in just a moment. But to Patrick Lefevre, he was taking to Twitter and saying that he will not be back. You know, this is mid-race, saying it doesn't matter whether we win this race or not this year, we will not be back to Paris Tour again. This is not road cycling. I mean, given you can basically set your watch by Patrick Lefevre complaints, I'm wondering why. I think a lot of people seem to be giving this one so much attention. Patrick Lefevre seems to be the kind of guy that if you give him a Rolex as a birthday present, he'd complain that he didn't like the wrapping paper.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've got a recurring reminder to talk about Patrick Lefevre complaining in the show notes, haven't we? Just pops up automatically every 4 or 5 weeks. And actually, he's talking complete bollocks, because of course he'll be back. You know, the exposure for him and his riders was great, whether they were punctured. You know, I'd be going to my tyre producer and saying, or moving to tubeless. There's all sorts of things you could do to deal with the punctures from the, you know, from the gravel and the detritus of the vineyards on the way through. But Lefevre, I think, saw a chance get away from him to add another to his prodigious tally of team victories. I think it was obvious fairly early on, although we had some strong riding from, you know, the likes of Nicky Terpstra, who's leaving the team this year, that it wasn't really the kind of thing that was cut out for Quickstep. And as soon as Lefevre thinks he's not going to win, Lefevre starts moaning. And, you know, he's got form. So much though I love Patrick, and we've praised him to the high heavens about his management of that team this year, the way they've managed to milk all of those wins from a vast majority of the riders in the team. I mean, you know, people who you might regard just as domestiques have taken big, big victories. I think he is the boy who's cried wolf when it comes to moaning, isn't he?
Oh, definitely. And I think, putting aside whether he will or won't be, or his team rather, will or won't be at Paddy Tour next year, because it's not a World Tour event, so there's no impetus for them to be there. They don't, contractually, they're not obliged to be there. The bit that really kind of stuck in the craw was this idea of, this is not road cycling. Someone show Pat a picture of Fausto Coppi at the Giro or on the Obisque at the Tour. Yeah. Gravel, like cobbles, and sure as shit you won't hear Lefevre complaining about cobbles, but gravel's been a part of road racing or road cycling as long as there's been road cycling, by virtue of the fact that those were the road surfaces that were available at the time. And if he wants to say, well, come on, it's 2018 and road cycling shouldn't equal riding in on anything but smooth tarmac, then that's kind of fine, but you're going to have to withdraw teams from Strada Bianca and Paris-Roubaix, Pat.
Yeah, and let's take it back to basics. What's his job? You know, his job is to represent his sponsors. Specialised pay a pretty, pretty penny to be underneath Quickstep riders. What's the biggest growth area in the market just now? Probably gravel bikes. Technologically, there has never been a better time in the history of cycling for bikes to be prepared for gravel. You know, with the advent of tubeless, with multiple rubber compounds, all sorts of stuff. So Lefevre has the bikes at his access to make his riders excel in this kind of terrain. Specialised want to milk that for publicity in a growing area of the market, particularly in America, and we'll talk about some innovation in that later in the show. I think Lefevre's just, I mean, he's just moaning for the sake of moaning. His riders have access to some of the best machinery in the world for dealing with this sort of terrain. It harks back to the history of the sport, which you're quite rightly bringing up there. You know, you look at 30s, 40s, 50s. They're racing on roads like these all the time. So I actually loved the race. I still, part of the old, you know, nostalgic Galloway goes, still not the Sprinter's Classic, is it? But I'll get used to it. You know, change happens. Killian's right.
And I'm wondering whether there was some kind of conspiratorial element to what Lefevre was saying, because you mentioned Nicky Terpstra, of course, leaving the team at the end of this season. But Lefevre was tweeting this at a point where Nicky Terpstra could still have won the race. I'm wondering whether internally it was a kind of anyone but Terpstra from Quickstep to win this race, because this brings us very, very neatly to, I think, the key point for me of the entire event. We had that trio that I mentioned coming out of the last of the gravel section, the last climb having been done, and it was Terpstra, Benoit Cosefois, and Søren Krogh Andersen contesting the win. The group behind them never ever looked like they were going to get going to catch them. And when Søren Krogh Andersen made his move 10k from the line, you think the only guy who should be following or is capable, I think, of following would be Nicky Terpstra. Mm. Now, other than simply having nothing left in the legs, and that's fine.
Because he'd done a fair bit of work, to be fair.
Yeah, he absolutely had. And you would expect, though, even if he had done a bit of work and didn't have anything left in the legs, there would at least have been an attempt, as half-hearted as it was. But I have no idea what Nicky Terpstra thought he was doing, just sitting with Benoit Cosenfroid for all that 10 kilometres. There was never any attempt to try and break the other rider or get away from him, or actually to force him to do very much work. It was just weird how that played out.
I actually think, you might have touched upon one of the reasons by saying he's moving on. I think we saw a Terpstra who knows where he's going next year. He saw himself in a position for a victory, so, you know, he certainly went for it. He did quite a lot of work. But once Søren Krogh Andersen was gone, I don't think Terpstra thought he could catch him, and he just you know, his head dropped and he didn't even try. I think he was also worried about the Frenchman because, you know, Cosnefroid had bridged over to those two in a real display of strength and was riding quite a canny race at that point. So I think Terpstra, as long as he stayed ahead of that group that was, you know, nearly a minute behind them with Oliver Nelson, Madoua, Thijs Benoot and Sepp van Mark, and of course Philippe Gilbert, his teammate, I think Terpstra was quite happy with the result. You know, it was a respectable way for him to bow out of the Quickstep jersey. We'll see him in different colours next year. And I think he just thought he was a beaten man. So whilst, you know, a hungry early season Terpstra might have dug that wee bit deeper, I think we saw a Terpstra at the end of a season who thought, ah, this is good enough.
Okay, you know, fair,
and I mean,
enough.
It's harsh to say, but yeah, I can kind of understand it. It's been a long season for Nicky Terpstra.
Indeed. As I say, it was bizarre watching it play out in the way it did, and that there was, it was like he didn't even register that Søren Krag Andersen had gone. It was just odd. And all of the reasons you've highlighted are probably the reasons behind what we saw. But whilst the Wolfpack's head honcho, Patrick Lefevre, wasn't best pleased with the parkour of Paris Tour, he was in much more ebullient a mood in finally announcing a new title sponsor for his team next season. Joining the fray in 2019 and beyond is Belgian window manufacturer De Koninck.
Well, I think we're going to have a few varieties of that pronunciation over the season from the Velocast team. I looked at that and just threw my hands up in terror. I've talked to you know, friends in Holland. I watched Jose Bean. She produced a nice wee clip which you could play over and over. And I decided instantly that wherever I could, I was going to defer to you and just saying that sponsor, because I know that once I'm in the middle of some excitement in Paris-Roubaix or something, where the, you know, the quick step guys are off the front and attacking, I am going to absolutely mangle that with monotonous regularity throughout 2019.
De Koninck,
I've got no idea. I mean, I'll practice it during the off season, because we're going to have to. Because let's be honest, we're going to have to say that name a lot next year, aren't we?
Well, I think had they not been able to find a sponsor, you could really point to a kind of death knell for cycling as we know it. With it, you know, given us as a team with 69 wins this season, not been able to find a title sponsor for the following year, clearly something would be rotten in the state of cycling Denmark.
Yeah, and absolutely, and we've brought that up time and time again. You move to, you know, the difficulties we've seen over many, many years with really strong teams finding sponsors, and this felt like it was almost a tipping point for me. You know, if we'd seen Lefevre unable to line up the money for the most successful team in cycling, other than maybe High Road during their, you know, their absolute heyday, then, you know, it's not just us at that point saying the business model's screwed. It was absolutely obvious. But we got a hint during Paris Tour that there was something coming. You know, we knew that there'd been rumours floating about. We'd heard there was going to be a press conference. And, you know, Lefevre himself said he presented the new deal with great pleasure. I bet it was more great relief than great pleasure. But for us as fans of the sport, I think this is fantastic for the simple reason that team not getting a title sponsor and having to really struggle to carry on would have robbed us of so much of the exciting racing that we've, you know, we've seen in 2018, and I fully anticipate, even though we've got some key riders leaving the team, and there's still some stuff to be answered about that as we're sitting here. You know, there was talk of Gaviria going to UAE. There'd been talk of him staying and then leaving again, and, you know, there's all sorts of stuff still up in the air, but the core of that team can survive. And, you know, we have to say thank you to Koninck, the manufacturer, window manufacturer. So it actually fits in quite well with the Quick Step Floors thing. You know, there's a continuity to that sponsorship, which for fans who take the trouble to work out who a sponsor is, and I know that many folk don't, you know, they just see the jersey, they don't go and know that Quick Step make floors and, you know, Bora make the hideously expensive but absolutely beautiful extraction systems and all that kind of stuff. But there's a continuity to it that I think works for the manufacturer and clearly works for Lefevre. So, you know, thanks to them for coming on board for one of the best teams of recent years.
It you've highlighted on something there that I was going to talk about, because they've now got the windows to go with the floor. I'm wondering whether there's a new title sponsor coming in a year or two that's, you know, Huff House or something, where they're going to build the walls and the roof round about it, and it is literally the house that Patrick Lefevre built.
Oh, I would love it if I could sell buying a Huff House to Ailsa just because they sponsor cycling. we've got a nice wee field near West Linton marked out where we'd dump one of them in a moment.
Very nice houses. If anybody from the company's listening, just do get involved in cycling, will you? Well, sticking with sponsorship, Rafa have announced they are to make a return to the World Tour Peloton in 2019 and become the clothing provider for Jonathan Vauter's EF Education Slipstream First Garmin powered by Chipotle, Drapac, Sharp, Cannondale team, whatever it's called. Last seen barely covering the bottoms of Team Sky, Rafa have said they will, quote, flip the script on the calendar with riders also competing in fixed gear criteriums, ultra endurance races and mixed terrain events.
I don't know if I'd be risking a pro rider's career in the Red Hook Criterium with the footage we've seen from that in recent years, which is, you know, probably first and foremost amongst those fixed gear crits. I actually think we've seen a lot of development in this area already, with people like Hugh, who must not be named, he who can be named and is putting these whistleblower money into a team which may or may not be sponsored by a cannabis manufacturer or whatever, riding things like the Leadburn race. Leadburn? Leadville. Leadburn's a town 10 miles from Peebles, people. That was just conditioning. The Leadville 100, you know, that big mountain bike race. So we've seen a crossover already. I'm going back to those comments I made about Quickstep and the specialised bikes and the gravel. If you're talking about a bike manufacturer and trying to sell to that emerging market, how good is it if you get the likes of Taylor Finney turning out for the big gravel races? You know, so I think it's actually a really good innovation. And it's the direct antithesis of Lefevre moaning about roads being a bit gravelly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of with you, but by the same token, I'm also looking at Rafa as in the company that you either know and love or know and hate, Rafa, and that's, you know, what they set out to do is build a following based on, you know, dividing opinion on whether you absolutely buy into that aesthetic and the culture that was built round about it. And this idea of getting a world tour team like Jonathan Vauter's squad to also do events like the Transcontinental, these fixed gear criterium, Leadville 100. And I can only really put this down to the new owners at Rafa, who of course are heirs to the Walmart fortune. And I think this is those guys now looking specifically to put Rafa into the American market much more than they have been up until recently. So I think Vauter's team plays, I think, more to an American market than it does necessarily to a European one. They don't tend to do that well at World Tour level. We talked about how they've only had, what, two victories this season, both coming at the Vuelta. So I think it's a very interesting and innovative way of getting sponsorship. And of course, we don't know the details of it, in terms of, you know, is there any actual money going to Vauter's team, or is it a clothing deal? And there's also talk about media, doing media stuff, which Vauter's, if you remember rightly, tried to do before with a sponsor just at the end of the Tour de France, which lasted about 5 minutes before that came to an end. So I kind of think this is a clever deal, possibly by Rafa, to try and reach more of the American market. I don't know how much good it's going to do Jonathan Vauter's World Tour squad. Yes, they get very nice kit to wear, but I know that Team Sky certainly put a lot of demands on Rafa in developing proper kit for World Tour riders. I don't know whether this is the kind of deal where Rafa will be working hand in glove with the riders to develop next generation cycling kit for World Tour riders. I think it's more, as I say, a kind of branding opportunity aimed at a domestic market that the new owners would like to see Rafa do better in.
Now, just as I try not to give you any credit where I can possibly avoid it, I do the same with, with our chum Derek in Ireland. And 2 years ago, he said to me that Voughter's team had essentially just become a lifestyle brand. And I think he's not far off with that. And I think Rafa fits right into it. You know, the kind of people who, for whom Voughter's, I want to say ethos, but media output, if you like, resonates, are the kind of folk who will wear Rafa most of the time. You know, they tend to be quite affluent, which is where, you know, the whole crowdfunding thing tended to work. They ride their bike. They want to, you know, they buy into that whole kind of shtick that Rafa offers you a lot of the time. And, you know, dear subscribers, if you're a fan of Education First Rafa, I'm not criticising you. You know, it's a demographic that they play very well to, though. And, you know, I think it will fit in well. As to the development, who knows? You know, Rafa have made big strides in their technical development, driven by those demands that Sky put upon them. So they may be able to just drop in. You know, they might just say, look, we've got all this high-end gear. We actually don't need to develop that much. And I suspect they're chucking in a bit of money as well as providing clothing. You know, we were hearing stories of the amount of money that, you know, relatively small teams are asking from clothing suppliers in order to, you know, to wear their kit the next year. So I suspect the Walmart guys are chipping in a bit to walk their overheads. And I think it'll work quite well. You know, it's worked for Education First, which I discovered when, you know, I visited Alex. It's actually an aspirational brand. You know, it's very, very middle class. It fits right into that demographic. So I think just like the Quick Step thing, having a bit of synergy about it, I think the Rafa thing might as well, just based on the fans of, you know, Education First Rapak. And it's actually good to see companies sticking with the sport through different teams. You know, it would be too easy just once something fell through with a particular team or, you know, you got bored just to drop out of the sport. So much though, you know, my feelings about Rafa are well known going back to 2009, despite some of their garments being absolutely beautiful. I think we have to applaud them for, you know, putting their money where their mouth is and sticking with the sport.
I was just thinking there about saying they have technology that they, you know, developed via the relationship with Team Sky that they can just plug in. I've got visions of Taylor Finney opening a box at the winter training camp. Going, what does this label say Chris Froome on it? No reason. Don't worry about that.
Why does this look like it's been dyed in the washing machine?
Scraping it back. Going, what is this Sky under here? Sticking with Sky then, keen observers of the business world were pondering the future of Team Sky this past week following the announcement that US communications company Comcast had bought Sky PLC for a staggering £29.7 billion. Adding the potential concern for the team was news that James Murdoch, long seen as the reason for the company's involvement in cycling, had resigned on Tuesday. However, a report in the UK newspaper The Telegraph claims that funding for Team Sky is secure until 2024, or 18 sponsors, to put it in Voughter's years.
That's harsh but fair, it's good to be said. This came as, I'm not going to say it's a surprise, because this is a merger that's been, it's not even a merger, it's a takeover that's been lurking in the background for quite a while. And I think it's certainly true, despite noises from inside the team, that Jeremy Darroch, the Sky PLC's chief executive, was a big backer of the team. And that's certainly true. But everything I've ever heard indicated that James Murdoch was, you know, the driving force behind it. In terms of, you know, his enthusiasm for the team. You know, the whole zero tolerance policy apparently originated with Murdoch, all of that stuff. So if I was Egan Bernal and I'd just signed a 5-year deal, or even Geraint Thomas and I'd just signed a 3-year deal, or young Ivan Sosa, who's been the subject of some controversy with, as Gianni Savio pads out his bank account in the recent week, I would have been a bit concerned about this. But the noises coming out are definitely credible, that they've got the backing of Comcast. And one of our subscribers pointed out to me that Comcast in the States are deeply involved in sports sponsorship. So there's the culture there, which may actually support that optimism. When I first heard it, I was deeply, deeply worried about the future of the team. But having, you know, heard from people who know about Comcast, having heard the noises from within the team, and having seen the confidence to make long-year, you know, five-year deals with the likes of Egan Bernal, I think we can be quietly confident Sky will be here in, you know, 3-5 years. It's not going to disappear because they keep winning. And if you're a sponsor, why would you stop something that's keeping winning?
I think also the fact that before the terms of this takeover were announced, that Brailsford et al. Were quite happy to be signing Egan Bernal on a 5-year deal, itself unheard of in cycling. So it's not like a 5-year contract is the de facto standard and oops, there's been a takeover which may put the entire team at risk. I think you've got to be very, very settled and confident of your future in the sport if you're prepared to offer and get a signature on a contract which is, as I say, just completely unheard of in cycling. There's no way that somebody high up in the accounting department at Sky or even Comcast coming in would be countenancing anything like a 5-year deal should they be looking to bring the team to an end at the end of 2019 or anything like that. They just wouldn't, you know, Brailsford wouldn't be allowed to do it. So I think even from that very myopic point of view, you could probably infer that the future is safe. But certainly, as you say, John, the noises kind of coming out of Team Sky are, no, don't worry, this takeover doesn't affect the running of Team Sky in any way, shape or form. Yes, Sky pulled out of the track sponsorship a couple of years ago to be replaced by HSBC, but the future for the road team is certainly looking very, very bright. And as you say, they do have a habit of continuing to win things.
You know, and if you look at Egan Bernal and that news about Ivan Sosa, who's a very close friend of Bernal and could be a perfect mountain domestique for him as he grows into the role of GC team leader, or GT team leader, as the likes of Froome, you know, enter the twilight of their career and drop out a wee bit, and Geraint Thomas isn't getting any younger. Sky have got everything in place to be annoying people for at least another 5 years.
I think you were a bit harsh on Gianni Savio a moment or two ago there. I think if I was putting any blame at the door regarding this fiasco that's been going on all summer regarding Sosa's contract and his move away from the Italians squad, initially rumoured to be going to Trek, I would put it four square at A, Trek's door for not securing the contract earlier, and slightly beyond that, the rider's agent for touting business beyond the realms of Trek, where I mean, Trek clearly thought they had the deal done and dusted, but what they, of course, didn't count on was a rider agent who was prepared to go and ask somebody else for more money.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's all the businessmen and the behind-the-scenes folk at Trek. I don't apportion any blame whatsoever to Sosa. And Gianni Savio, if he looks at a deal that he sees two that are both equally legal, and he's getting a percentage of Sosa's, you know, putative salary as a development cost refund, if you like, why the hell wouldn't you, you know, go, actually, you know, Trek, we've got nothing on the line here. We haven't signed anything. These guys had offered us more money. We've got Ivan's signature on the line. Sorry, but that's business.
Exactly that. Now, a public service announcement before we move on. Any listeners in the Birmingham area, and that's Birmingham in the UK, not Birmingham, of course, in America. Any listeners in the Birmingham area that maybe frequent second-hand markets around the city and its environs, please be on the lookout for, as I put it in the intro, a kind of ornate-looking fruit bowl that was stolen from the National Exhibition Centre as part of the Pinarello stand. The ornate fruit bowl I'm referring to, of course, was Geraint Thomas's Tour de France winner's trophy.
See, I've got two things going through my mind now. One is we need to do some kind of off-road sportive called the Ledburn 100. it would just be awesome. And we could stop for pints and peebles afterwards. But the second one is I pictured myself in my dotage, even more so than now, but sitting with, you know, Billy Connolly's one big slipper in the bath chair in the old folks' home watching Flog It or some such, you know, one of these antique shows. And, you know, the expert might look at the vase in his hand and say, so where did your granny get this vase? Oh, she bought it for £1 in a market in Birmingham. Well, this is actually the 2018 Tour de France winner's trophy.
I'm also reminded that there's a sketch show that used to be on here in Scotland called Chewing the Fat. And there's a sketch which kind of runs through one episode in various bits and pieces where... a couple from, a really daft couple from somewhere in Glasgow win the lottery and they spend the entire amount on a Van Gogh painting and they've got it up above the fireplace in a frame and someone from the TV interviewer is saying, are you not worried about this kind of thing being stolen? And there's a turn that's just, it's vanished straight away. Later on in the programme, somebody's... trying to sell like a kettle or whatever, and he says, hey, I've got a kettle and this big poster to sell you. I'll take the kettle, wrap it in that big poster for me, will you? And of course it's the Van Gogh painting. It just reminded me of that. Somebody's using it as a fruit bowl at the minute. I'm absolutely positive of it.
Well, let's have one more anecdote before we get into actual meaningful discussion about it. I think I've mentioned this before, although a fair few years ago, that when the Edinburgh Bicycle Co., where I worked at the time, it was two shops in one block with a plumber in the middle who refused to sell to us despite us throwing increasingly large amounts of money at him. And when he finally did sell, we had a big star come to open the new expanded shop. And that big star was Chris Boardman. Absolutely at the height of his powers. You know, this is the early 90s. And we got all the pictures of him towing people around in child things, and he had his medal with him. So I've got a picture of Angus with the, you know, Olympic pursuit medal. And somebody, I would say I can remember, but I'm going to let them remain nameless, put his medal down after they'd been photographed with it or whatever, just on a counter in the shop. And Boardman saw this, pocketed it, put it in his pocket, and then spent the next half hour winding everybody up about his lost Olympic medal. So I'm wondering if Geraint's going to pop out in a week and go, got it all the time, just wound you up. Right, let's take the joking and the anecdotes aside. This is really a shitty thing to do. Pinarello, I think, have to have some culpability for not taking care of arguably the most important medal in cycling, or a trophy in cycling, although Alejandro Valverde might beg to differ with you on that one. So they have to take some responsibility. But whatever dickhead took it also has to take some responsibility. I mean, what if you think of yourself as a cycling fan, and presumably you do if you're at a cycling show, what kind of arsehole do you have to be to steal this thing?
No, in fairness to Pinarello, they absolutely have held their hand up and say, we bear full responsibility.
And they're gutted.
Yeah, and they're really embarrassed by it. They said that it was just like the stealing of the big poster and the Chewing the Fat sketch. They literally turned their back for 2 seconds and it had gone. And you only hope that whoever did it has the common sense just to say, right, I'm really sorry. Rush of blood to the head, here, have it back. I mean, I know that a lot of people will argue that actually the yellow jerseys and the memories will be the most important thing for Geraint, but it's still the thing that the riders will put on in, you know, their own little trophy cabinet in their spare room or whatever, put it in the toilet or above the mantelpiece, wherever riders keep such things. It's, you know, the most important thing in cycling, winning the Tour de France, and anything that takes away from Geraint's memory of winning that is just absolutely heartbreaking for him. So I do hope he gets it back. I know that ESO will probably make him another one in the case that it doesn't get sent back to him, but... as I say, I hope he does get it back, because it's just an awful thing to have happened. You, at the goodness of your heart, allow that trophy to be shown as part of Pinarello's stand at the cycling show in Birmingham, and it gets nicked. Just wrong.
I tell you what, my many years of watching Flogget and, you know, the Antiques Roadshow and all that, I think that Sefer porcelain can be worth a few bob. So, you know, for Geraint's grandchildren, it's taken away potential revenue from them when they flog it off heartlessly at some meaningless auction.
Now, moving on to actual racing, Tom Squins has put himself into the dark horse for Il Lombardia category this week by winning the Italian semi-classic Tre Valli Varenzini. The Trek Segafredo rider came past Thibaut Pinot to take the victory from the group of seven who contested the finish.
I always want to say Varenzini. Because it's in Varese. That's one of my most mispronounced races. I've got to say, Squeens showed perfectly how important heart, guts and persistence is in winning a bike race. You know, we know he's strong, we know he's got a good finish, but on that final climb which we went on the finishing circuit, which was absolutely beautiful, you know, you've heard me rant for hours on end about how motor racing circuits take the soul out of cycling because they put it on a scale which is just not relatable. You know, the circuits are so wide, we're used to seeing cars go so fast. What we saw was narrow, narrow old lanes, you know, high houses on both sides, which put a beautiful scale in perspective to the, you know, the effort of the guys who were riding away in that. It was a very human race, which I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed. And it would have been so easy for Toms just to drop the head, you know, let others go away. But time and again, even after, you know, he'd had a wee dig, he looked like he was getting dropped, he just hung on and hung on. And if he hadn't had that strength of character, that absolute sheer determination not to be dropped from a race that he had a good punt at winning, we wouldn't have seen him put in a place to do that sprint at the end. It was a great win from him that owed as much to his head and his heart as to his legs.
Yeah, it was also, I mean, Thibaut Pinot showing willing as well. He started off the sprint, just didn't have it to come back to Squeens once he was overtaken. But you're absolutely right in everything you say, especially in the beauty of this race. I love this week because, you know, as we're recording, Milan-Torino is on. I think there's only about 20 kilometres or so left, so we'll be catching up with that later. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, at the weekend, we've got Il Lombardia. You get some cracking Italian late season racing going on. Absolutely beautiful roads to watch racing on.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of my favourite bits of the year. And, you know, as Dave in Australia, one of our subscribers, said, it's really a hidden gem. You know, a lot of people forget about these races between the Worlds and Lombardia, you know, the last of the monuments. And every year they give us fantastic racing. You know, we saw Matthias Frank, Robert Power and Mitchell and Scott. Great to be away in the lead from a group which, before it broke up, was a who's who of, you know, the great classics riders that will look to perform well at the weekend. We saw Alejandro Valverde in his really, really nice new jersey. We saw Pete Kennich from Bora Hansgrohe. I mean, he's really, after leaving Team Sky, he had a bit of a hard start at Bora, I think, but he's really coming to the fore to a point where he might even be one of my favourites for Il Lombardia as we move on. We saw Vincenzo Nibali have a dig after David Gaudu of France du Jour attacked. Rigoberto Urán passed Kenya like he was standing still later in the climb. And I think what we saw was a lot of people like Rigo, like Alejandro, like, you know, even Thibaut Pinot, although he was up there for the sprint for the finish, they've got half a mind on the weekend that's to come. So I think we saw them having really big digs that maybe cost them a wee bit much in effort so that they didn't quite have it to either bridge across to the front group or actually stay away from Toms as he was sprinting at the finish. You know, they've got Il Lombardia on their minds. But it was absolutely spirited racing from some of the best riders. You know, even Luis Leon Sanchez, who we haven't seen for a while, he performed well, was great. That Morisolo climb at the finish is it's absolutely beautiful. And the, you know, the inclines it provides means the racing was fascinating. So I'm looking forward, after we finish recording, to, you know, to rewind and watching Milan-Torino. But this race was just, it was everything I love about late season Italian racing.
Sorry, you just mentioned Valverde's recently shown World Champions jersey. Yes, it is very nice. I can't remember who it was that said it, but I noticed somebody talking about just seeing Valverde or Movistar's attempt at the World Champions jersey is evidence of how, if you put enough strict rules around something, i.e. what you got to do to make the world champions jersey that not even Movistar can cock it up. I can't help but feel there's some kind of analogy to anti-doping there.
Well, I just thought that the guys at the Endura factory in Livingston had been in the Buckfast a wee bit. So, actually, all joking aside, you and I both, I know, have had discussions with loads of people about the legitimacy of Valverde's world championship. And for me, that discussion is finished. He looks right in that jersey. You know, he's like Paolo Bettini or Souza's, you know, erstwhile agent before the mucking about started, Maurizio Fondri Est. There are some folk who just like look right in the Arconciel. And Valverde's one of them. He just, you know, you saw it and it was no surprise. It wasn't where you went, oh, I'd forgotten he'd won that. Which I did even, I suppose, to a certain extent with Michał Kwiatkowski when he took that. Sometimes takes a wee bit of time to sink in that we've got a new world champion, particularly now when, you know, that jersey has been nailed on Peter Sagan's back for the last 3 years. Valverde looks like he's been in it forever.
To the final classic of the 2018 season now. Honestly, where does the time go? The 112th Il Lombardia gets underway this Saturday, prompting sighs over the stunning Italian vistas around Lake Como and as the riders tackle the famous climbs of the Madonna del Gesalo and Muro di Sormano. So let's look at the route for 2018 and who the favourites might be to take the win in Como.
This is my preferred version of the recent route. You know, we've seen it flip-flop a wee bit in some years. But with this, you've got some really significant climbs. You know, the Muro di Sormano, the Saviglio, towards the end, with absolutely loads of opportunities for a solo victory, as has been demonstrated to great effect last year by Vincenzo Nibali. Add to that, this year, probably 15 to 20 riders who could reasonably go in with a shout at taking the victory, along with a world champion who's done well in this race, but, you know, really wants it on his palmarès. And I think we're in for a most toothsome bit of racing at the weekend. It's a beautiful race anyway. You know, we see the Great Lakes, we see all of those bits of scenery that you and I, you know, wax lyrical about every year. But this year, as we saw, you know, in not so much in Paris Tour, but certainly in the Tre Valley, we saw a big block of people before that final wee break went away who could conceivably be in for the victory. We're going to see a really, really competitive Il Lombardia this year. And, you know, it's arguably the most beautiful of the monuments, but, you know, it's often not quite the most competitive. I think we're going to see a really, really competitive race this year. There's just loads of folk who are in with a shout, and loads of folk who we've seen racing this week who clearly, you know, as I said a wee minute ago, have one eye on the weekend with a view to adding a monument to their palmarès. It's going to be great.
The route, as you were talking about there, it's exactly the same as it was last year and in 2015, but for one tiny change. Last year, it tackled the San Fermo de Battaglia, but the road leading to that is closed this year, so they're going to do the Monte Olimpino climb instead. Not as testing as the Battaglia, but it's 1.7 kilometres, averaging 5%, ramps up to a maximum of 9, and you get over the top of that 3 kilometres before coming down to the finish line. So, as I say, almost exactly the same as we saw last year, but for that small change. So that brings us to all that, you know, that host of riders that you say are up for the win. Alejandro Valverde, we've mentioned. His tail, of course, will be up, looking resplendent in his brand new world champions jersey. I guess he goes into this race being the favourite for it.
Oh, I think definitely. You know, he's got the form, he's held the form, well, not just for seasons, for decades. and he will be motivated to show that world champions jersey. We've seen world champions perform well often in Lombardia, and I see no reason to doubt that. So Valverde's in there. Thibaut Pino, I think, is in with a great shout. Bauke Mollema, recently, after showing all year, won a race in Italy, so he's there. I say Pete Kenyuch is one of my outsiders because he performed so well this week. Vincenzo Nibali and Chasing Gaudi showed that he's in the kind of form where he could be a contender. But Gianni Moscone's going to win.
Damn it, that was my pick. I thought you were going to go for Valverde, and I was going to say, ha. But what about Gianni Moscon?
I think he's going to win it. I mean, we saw him in the Worlds. He was cracked on a climb which is, you know, so, so severe by a bunch of riders who were so, so clever, having done an awful lot of work. He showed his climbing legs are just about there. He's just recently won the Italian Time Trial Championship, showing that the watts are there. I think it's all coming together for Moscon for a big, big win for an Italian rider. You know, we've seen how pleased Vincenzo Nibali was in recent years. Do you remember when that Italian flag blew symbolically onto his chest as he raised his arms? I just got a feeling that people are going to go from the hashtag anyone but Valverde to anyone but Moscon at the weekend.
Yep, social media is going to be a whole bucket of fun with two of the most disliked riders in the peloton being the two biggest favourites for the race. But I hope none of that spoils your enjoyment of it if you're not a fan of those particular riders. I still think it's going to be a cracking race, and I'm with you, John. I think it's going to be Gianni Moscon who's just going to have the edge over Valverde. I'm not discounting Nibali, but he just doesn't look like he's sharp enough this year after that crash, which has hampered him so much in the latter part of the season that he suffered at the Tour de France. Are other riders to maybe look at? Primoz Roglic, perhaps? Roman Bardet?
Yeah, I mean, any of those guys. Dan Martin, even, you know, he's done well in this race in the past. So, as I say, I mean, you could just make a list of about 20 folk. Because Lombardia is a very, very selective race, but it tends to be, you know, the selection stays almost to the end, where often we see a solo rider. I just can't help but feel that everything's coming together for Moscon, and after, you know, after the turmoil, he's shown the form, he's got everything in place. Team Sky are, you know, a decent classics team. You know, they're not the dominant people that everybody else is, you know, or they are during the Grand Tours, but, you know, they're good enough to support a decent shout from Moscon. I mean, even Ivan Sosa, who we've been talking about all the time, is starting just 20, so I mean, he'll be in for a shout. You know, he'll want to show his new employers that he's got the legs to do something. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me to see somebody in an Androni jersey supporting Moscon as he romps up the Sermano or something.
Wow. Well, it's now that time on the show once again where we try to convince you to part with a very reasonable amount of your hard-earned cash. And before I hand over to the Bob Geldof of podcasting, I'd like to apologise for the somewhat brusque manner in which my colleague here delivered last week's solicitation.
Hey, it was brain fog. I was just back. I was jet-lagged. You know, I was tired and emotional, man. I mean, you can't blame me. I'll try and make it a bit more decorous this week. Every year for the last 5 years we've done an early bird. Every year you guys chip in what has become increasingly a large bit of our turnover for the year, and it really, really makes us incredibly grateful that so many are willing to part with your hard-earned cash in one big lump sum, you know, because it gives us security throughout the year to plan, to pay people, all that kind of stuff. So it means a huge amount to us. What you get from it, besides us waffling on, you know, and Killian and Ashley and all that kind of stuff, is, of course, a slightly better price. You get 12 months of content for the price of 10. And we think it's a great deal for you. I've seen this year probably the highest number of early bird subscriptions we've had at this point of the year. I'd love to see that carry on. But whatever happens, I was brusque last week, I'm being humble and very, very grateful this week, because I've got a favour to ask of you as well. So, you know, I'm trying to butter you up before I ask for the favour. Go to velocast.cc for the early bird option, sign up, and you will make both of us incredibly happy. The favour I have to ask, actually, is after a number of years, and I've never done this before, we've been putting out a bit of free content so that people can get a picture of what we do. Now, what I'd like you to do, and I remember giving the guys at the Velo Club Don Logan a hard time for asking this of their listeners, but very few of you come to us through iTunes this year. But the iTunes stuff is where the free stuff goes. So if you like the show, I'd like you to go to iTunes and leave us a review, because it really helps people to find the show. And this is the only time I'll ask you to do this. You know, it's a one-off. But as we reintroduce some free content so that people can get a sense of what they would be paying for if they decide to honour us with their subscriptions, extra reviews will really help people find that so they can listen. But that's it. Go to iTunes, leave us a review. If you think we're rubbish, leave us a one-star review. Although, you know, since you're paying for that, that's fairly unlikely. If you think we're great, leave us a five-star review or anything in between. And, you know, that's it. That's the only time I'll ask you to do this. But earlybird.velocast.cc, we'd be really grateful. You'd feel warm and fuzzy inside for giving us your money and getting a good deal.
And while you've been talking that up, I've been composing a little lullaby just in case all of that was a bit still a bit too harsh for the listeners. So how about this? Go to sleep, and when you wake, won't you give us some money? Think of all the fun you'll have, all for 59.60.
You know, for people who hear this and don't know, Scott in a previous incarnation was a proper rock star with some very, very good tunes under his belt. You would never guess it from listening to
that. Well, that's all there is from us this week. Thank you so much for joining us. John and I will return to discuss all the action from Il Lombardia. I'm still giggling. And we hope you can join us for that in the next edition of The Velocast.